Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is a podcast from The Times, sports newspaper of the year.
Hello and welcome to The Game. I'm Gabriel Marcotti and I'm here with a roundup of the best of the weekend's action. I love this whole idea of this being a 40-minute monologue, and audience research shows that you would all rather listen to me for 40 minutes. However, sadly, I'm not allowed, so to offer some insightful punctuation and some different voices, I have Pedro Pinto from CNN, I have Tony Barrett from Deepest Darkest Liverpool, and, of course, Rory K. Smith, who's from Surbiton or Richmond or someplace like that, but originally from Yorkshire, as we know. Davy Moyes is leaving us guessing about his new contract, so we're going to ask why so few British managers get the big Premier League jobs. But before that, we head to the Emirates. Rory, I'm going to start with you, because boos resounded everywhere at the final whistle. And once again, you pick up the paper and the complaints are, as Wenger lost his way and this and that. I thought you wrote some very insightful things today, actually, about how when Wenger sort of followed other people's advice, like they told him, like, you need to make big money signings and buy superstars, and he buys Arshavin. And, you know, you need to, the squad is too young and inexperienced, and he buys, like, Andre Santos and Gervinho and people like that. Kind of when he follows other people's advice, he sort of loses his way. Is this kind of what's going on? And did it take this defeat for people to kind of ratchet up the pressure, or was it just inevitable sooner or later?
No, I mean, it's just Arsenal, isn't it? I thought they turned a corner this season a little bit, winning at Sunderland. It looked like they had a bit of kind of solidity, a bit of backbone to them. But then they go and do something like this, they'll probably beat Bayern. And then, you know, there is no logic to Arsenal. I think the criticism that was directed at Wenger, or has been directed at Wenger really since 2005, is fair. I think Arsenal were too young. I think they did have no plan B. They couldn't counter the concept of the defensive midfielder. And I think that they did have a lack of players who were ready now rather than for the future. But the problem is that because Wenger's had to make all these compromises, you look at Arsenal now and you kind of wonder, what are they for? They're not the best looking side in the Premier League. They're not great. They're not no better to watch than Spurs or United or whoever else. They're not young particularly. They're not attractive. Kind of, they don't win trophies. So what do Arsenal do? I think that's the question they now have to address, whether that's with Wenger as manager or at some point in the future without Wenger as manager.
You can't keep justifying staying with a manager who has visibly lost his philosophy, goes out and makes buys that then don't justify his philosophy either. I said it
example,
4 or 5
example,
years ago. Sorry?
Example.
Well, when you get someone like Andre Santos, who...
Okay, other than Andre Santos, we can't just pick on him every week.
Okay. You lose Song, because a lot of people criticize the fact that you let all these super talented players like Cesc, like Nazari, like Van Persie, and I could go on for a while, leave. But when you lose Song and you don't get another ball-winning midfielder, you're asking for trouble. Especially when you get people like Per Mertesacker, who's going to need time adapting to the Premier League and the pace of the Premier League. You don't have anyone to protect a back four that hasn't been great, that's been ravaged by injuries as well. So I don't think he's built this team in a balanced way. He hasn't gone out looking for a spine that you can count on. And yes, he spent a lot of money on Arshavin and then played him out of position. He's gone out and got a Lukas Podolski, who I still think is a good player. But from what I know and what I've been told by people at Arsenal, the players just don't believe in his methods anymore. And then when that happens, the emperor's naked and someone's got to point and say, you need to change.
I think that's absolutely right, but the names are quite telling. So you've got Mertesacker, Santos, we don't need to concentrate on. You've got Giroud, you've got Diaby still there, Arteta. It's a squad that reads like Wenger's lost important players and gone out and bought whoever he could. There is no kind of holistic approach that Wenger's taken. What is the style of football that Arsenal are trying to do? Do they want winners who cross the ball for Olivier Giroud? Well, I don't know. Do they got Podolski and Walcott, neither of whom are brilliant crossers of the ball? What is Arsenal's plan?
Tony, you're outside the London media bubble. How does Arsenal look from Merseyside?
Well, for me, it stands comparison with Wenger's, the season he's having now, stands comparison with Benitez's last year at Liverpool, where the thing that...
We were going to get a Liverpool and Benitez reference from you.
Benitez and Liverpool was the classic case of everyone looking at the manager and not looking enough at the board and at the owners and what was going on wrong above at the very top of the club. And Benitez took all of the flack, which is not to say he didn't get things wrong. He clearly did. He made bad signings, as Wenger has done. The players lost faith with him, as it appears is the case with Arsenal. And there's a lot of that happening at Arsenal that happened at Liverpool. But if you don't look at the owners and you don't look at the way the club is being run, changing manager will have no positive effect whatsoever. All you will do is get an inferior manager, because the people who run the club won't be qualified to make a good appointment. And you can just see Arsenal repeating the same mistakes Liverpool have done, although my feeling is that the Arsenal owners are quite happy, the Arsenal board are quite happy for Wenger to be there copping all the flack going. Every week when the result goes on for Arsenal, it's Arsene Wenger who's in the firing line, which I understand in one respect, because Arsenal should be more competitive, but in another way, I just think, well, Arsene Wenger's proved himself. He's proved himself over the period of time. What's changed? Why has he stopped proving himself? Is it just a case of him going stale? Is it just a case of him losing his way? Or are there other mitigating factors which would undermine any manager's mind? I think it is. I think it's a blend of the two, but I just think people need to look more at the club as a whole rather than just the manager as an individual.
I think, Tony, great minds alike, because I think you hit the nail 100% on the head. Arsenal have an owner. His name is Stan Kroenke. I think from the top, they need to come out and make some kind of statement, especially now that this season the fans are restless. What kind of a club are we? This is a club that has made something like £160 million in after-tax profit over the last 5 years. Come out and explain, all right, our strategy is this. We're going to pay off the stadium, or we're going to do this, or we're going to do that, or we're going to start competing financially with other clubs, or we think Wenger is the right man for this and that reason, and this is how he's going to do it. And yet you need Stan Kroenke to come and do that. Not Ivan Gazidis, who I really like the guy, but Ivan Gazidis isn't the boss. It's not his club. He's an employee of Kroenke. I think you need somebody to come out and make a statement, because right now, I'm sorry, the way it's looking to me is that, this guy who, Silent Stan, is sitting there on his butt, could care less about winning and is just happy extracting as much money as possible from this club and seeing the value of the franchise, as he might call it, grow and grow. If that's what you want to do, fine. We live in a free world. It's your club. It's your money. They wouldn't let Usmanov, because he's weirdo and foreign, buy the club. You got it instead. Good for you. But I think you owe it at least to come out and say it. This is how I see my investment in Arsenal.
But the problem is, and the kind of the mystery with Arsenal, is that they do have money to spend. The figure kind of varies how much.
The cash reserves.
Yeah, they have these cash reserves, which I think are there basically to ensure that they can keep on growing. And that's fine. If you want it sensible to save money in a recession, that's not a problem at all, although obviously it doesn't help the economy. They've got the cash reserves, but they have other monies that they can use. There's no shortage. It's not like Liverpool.
That's what they say.
In 2010. Well, this is the issue.
So that's what Arsene Wenger says, and we still can't agree whether we believe him or not.
Liverpool in 2010 had no money. That was the problem there. That the, as Tony quite rightly says, that there was an issue with the owners that had to be looked at first and foremost. With Arsenal, we don't know if that's true. We don't know whether they have money and Wenger's refusing to spend it because he wants to prove a point, or whether they don't have money and Wenger is kind of concealing that fact. I don't know the answer to that question, but finding out is pretty key.
But you know what? As you mentioned Liverpool, and as average of, as Liverpool have been in the last years, they still won a trophy. And I don't think that you can justify spending this much time as Arsenal without winning anything. It's just the winning mentality is not there. They crumble. They don't have someone who has a character on the field of play, and you've got to blame the manager as well for that, for not being able to foster that kind of mentality.
Speaking of the manager, I want to throw this out there just specifically on the game, because it just struck me as kind of weird, right? I mean, I think we look at the game, I think we would all agree that, and we have to give credit to the Blackburn goalkeeper, Jake Keane, who'd imagine somebody named Keane doing something good for Blackburn, and Grant Hanley at the back, the whole defense, they defended really, really well. We've all made the jokes about Venkies and the chicken, and look, oh, how can they know anything about football? They're from Asia.
There's a woman.
What imagine
the women
that.
Know.
Exactly. Thank you, Mr. Gray. And then what happens is, who do they appoint as their global? Well, first of all, they get rid of Big Sam, who's fantastic. They appoint Steve Keane, the guy with the who gave the best explanation ever in the world for his drunk driving. Then he's gone, and then we criticize him getting rid of him. Oh, but it's good. But they appoint Henning Berg, but then we criticize him for sacking Berg after 2 months, even though I think when. I mean, the season just started, but I think I'm right in saying that when Keane took over, they were when Berg took over from Keane, they were like third, and then when Berg was sacked, they were like way down the table. But that's okay; they're stupid and mean for sacking Henning Berg. And then they appoint Michael Appleton again, and we're all talking about, oh, how silly, and we're all laughing at Shebby Singh. Now, I even saw somebody go and describe, oh, Shebby Singh, he's a TV pundit. Not even a football pundit. He was described as a TV pundit. Shebby Singh is a former international and a qualified coach, by the way. He may be a Malaysian international. But you know what? I think we've seen great coaches from footballing backwaters, including some in these very British Isles. So maybe some people should STFU, yes? Not you, Rory. I was just looking at you when I said that. Anyway, who's laughing now? Dave, I think Appleton's record, 4 wins, 2 draws and a defeat, something like that. They're going to play Millwall next, which on paper at least you'd think that they'd be favored. Do some people maybe suggest that maybe we were a little bit hard on Shebby Singh because he's so far outside the football fraternity? Roy, you like sticking up for foreigners.
I remember listening to Shebby Singh's interview on 606 a few months ago, and it was I know someone who knows him, Shebby, and he apparently he's a really nice fella, really sort of passionate and knows his stuff. Interview was hilarious. Just he kept calling, Robbie Savage Darren. It was really weird. Anyway,
was it because the guy with him was Darren Fletcher?
Yeah. He called Darren Fletcher Robbie. He called both of them Robbie throughout the interview. It was fantastic. Anyway, Appleton's a good manager. Looks like Voldemort. That's important. They've got it wrong a lot, Venkies, but it's important that we allow them the chance to learn from their mistakes.
Hey, Tony, if Shebby Singh, if his name were like Sam Stone, and you know he was from the Vauxhall Road in Liverpool, like our boss, would the media have treated him slightly different?
Yeah, I think they would. I think that is in the English media. I'm still trying to work out what STFU means.
You mean shut the
No wonder you couldn't say but no, I agree with that. I do think there is that in the English media, there is a feeling of superiority on a number of levels whenever foreigners are mentioned. There is a feeling of superiority and that we can do things better than foreigners, even though there is plenty of evidence to the contrary of that. And I think that applies to Blackburn's owners as much as it does to so many other factors.
I think if Shebby Singh, Pedro, had been, I think he pays a price for being Malaysian. I think, had he been Spanish or Italian or German, people might have viewed it slightly different. But he came out with something which I think is right. He said, no, I don't see why we should give somebody a 3-year contract, a new manager. I'm going to give him a short term. I want to give him a short term contract so he can prove to me that he wants to be here, that things work. Because there's a lot more unemployed managers out there than there are football clubs. And to me, that just makes so much sense. And yet, we often live in awe of the culture of the manager, and you need stability in 3 years, blah, blah, blah. I kind of feel like if you as a manager can't get respect, even with a short-term contract, maybe you shouldn't be managing.
So you're saying it wasn't a good idea to give him a deal like Alan Pardew, perhaps? Anyway.
It's a different one because there's a million get-outs, but, you know, yeah. And maybe it was right for them. But, I mean, in this case, if you're appointing a new guy, why not go to Appleton and say, hey, you're talented. Show me what you can do in 6 months.
Yeah, why not? I don't think managers need that security. They don't have it anyway, even if they sign a 2 or 3 year deal.
Well, they do, because then they get money and then they sue the club for more money.
They don't. They don't.
Even if the fans, they quit the week before the season starts, Martin O'Neill.
Well, fans speak loud enough and managers get sacked. That's just the way of life in the world of football. But yeah, let's see what this guy can do and we'll go from there. I don't think there's anything wrong with that perspective.
All right, to move on to Liverpool and Swansea. Tony, you were there. We touched upon this before, but Michael Laudrup decided to rest everybody. I can see why. Who knows when Swansea will get another shot at winning a trophy. They're in mid-table. Can they kind of earn the right to go and put out a shadow squad, as some people like to call it, against Liverpool?
No, I think he's in the right, and if Swansea win the Capital One Cup next weekend, I think it will be vindicated, but I just think they paid too much of a price. It was too much of a rotation, and it was too much of a dishevelled side. Swansea being in Dubai in the days leading up to the game, and they went into the game with that kind of attitude that this particular football match didn't matter. But where I do excuse Laudrup is these players can all head, run, kick, tackle. They can do all those things. Maybe not as well as the players who were arrested, but they can do the basics of footballers, and they didn't do that to anybody. They were actually embarrassing at times. I think Liverpool had 35 shots on goal, which is the most by any team in Europe this season, which is ridiculous. 22 shots in the first half alone. Swansea didn't compete. And that, to me, it's one of those where people will rightly praise Liverpool. They can only do what they can against a team that's in front of them. But when you start saying that about teams that you can only beat what's in front of you, it's because what in front of you is not particularly good, and Swansea were spectacularly bad on the day.
What if we get to a scenario where it's Liverpool, Spurs and Arsenal all competing for that fourth Champions League spot and the untold riches that come with it late in the season? And in the end, the difference is made by the 3 points that Liverpool got against Swansea. Given that, well, we used to say that Arsenal used to get their way all the time with the league, but I mean, might they have a strong case, Roy?
No, because Swansea did put out a weak side. Obviously, there's no denying that. It had Gary Monk in it. But they chose 11 players from their 25-man squad, and it's up to them how they want to use them. I don't agree with you, Dab, for once, on the issue of Laudrup resting players. They had a week off. They've got a week. They're playing a League Two side. They didn't need rest. You could have played Michu for an hour, do you know what I mean? And then try and get something, and then if it's not working, if you're 2-0 down, fine. But there was no. It's not like the Capital One Cup final is on Tuesday. They've got a week to rest, and I personally feel that momentum is important. It's not like Swansea have got anything else to compete for, particularly for the rest of the season. That, you know, they'll be
maybe we wait to put in the boot to Laudrup if we see what happens. Yeah. If we lose to Bradford because they don't have momentum, then that's fine.
That's a different debate. But no, they chose 11 players from their 25-man side. I'm fairly sure Laudrup will have gone out and with a side that he thought could at least compete. If not, you know, he'll have gone trying to win. No manager ever goes into a game thinking, oh, it doesn't really matter. But no, I don't think they'll be fine. They put out. I mean, and to be fair, that you know, there were still two or three, maybe four or five players who were regular features of the first team in there.
All right, enough Swansea for this week. Tony, let's talk more Liverpool. Coutinho, I saw him come on, and I thought he looked like he's supposed to look. What's sort of the early feedback on him? Because, I mean, my take is always that this is a huge gamble. You don't quite know what you're going to get. So much upside, but also so many concerns, and they spent a lot of money on him. How did he look to you?
The thing I like about Coutinho is he is talented, and that may sound glib in a way, but Liverpool haven't signed too many players of talent over the last few years. They've signed players who have certain qualities, but not without right talent, and he has that. he's the kind of signing that you can excuse not working out if it doesn't work out, because he will come in and he will provide quality. There's no question about that. He looks and performs on first glance a lot like Luis Garcia, who people remember from a few years back. He's very easy on the eye. He's good with the ball. His movement from the left to inside is impressive and creates space for Jose Enrique to overlap. And he does all the things that you'd want a player wide of the front three to do. He looks good. The problem is that Swansea didn't test him in the way that he needs to be tested. There was no physical confrontation. There were no heavy tackles. And he was allowed to play the game as he wants to. And that's the question mark. What happens with him when he can't play as he wants to? What kind of player is he then? Because I think we all know he's got ability. So the test is still to come for him. But the early signs are positive because he is clearly a good footballer.
Pedro's nodding along. I think you started your nodding when Tony mentioned the fact about, you know, him being a talented player, maybe Liverpool not signing many talented players. I mean, I think you have certain views on this point.
I agree with everything that Tony just said, that there haven't been that many players that have been technically gifted that Liverpool have gone out and signed. Maybe hard-working players.
Luis Suarez, Joe Cole.
Suarez is a bit different, though, isn't he?
Yeah, Suarez is the exception that proves the rule, really. And Joe Cole never really had a chance. And I've always been a Joe Cole fan. Coutinho, I was really surprised that Inter let him go. I know for a fact they have a lot of financial problems over there with Massimo Moratti, and that's one of the reasons that convinced them to let him go. Every time I watched him play for Inter, I was impressed. Every time I watched him play for Brazil's under 21 or under 20 team, I was impressed. This is a really good player. Physically, he needs to bulk up a little bit. When he has a full season in England, he's going to struggle. But right now, he can make a huge impact. Defenders aren't going to be too familiar with what he does, and he's got speed, he's got skill, he can go by guys, and he's a perfect signing for Liverpool. Whether he plays behind the striker or plays on the wing, he will be a big plus in any game Liverpool choose to use him.
Pedro's quite right that he will, for his first season in England, his first full season in England, he will have to have more muscle mass, he'll have to be bigger, and that is what will ruin him as a player. Or what could ruin him as a player. The problem in England is that we take players like Coutinho, who've got immense natural talent, and we force them to become athletes that they're not meant to be, and that impacts on how they play the game. So Liverpool would actually, in a sense, do well to allow to just accept that they've got kind of a left winger who's a bit light and a bit kind of slender, who doesn't tackle particularly well and occasionally doesn't get into games because right backs beat him up, if they want to maximise his undoubted talent. There's no point having just a load of robots.
Oscar is a little bit like that at Chelsea, and he's had a lot of ups and downs as well, because I don't mean necessarily that he needs to become Hulk all of a sudden, but I just think that physically, from an endurance point of view, in the winter he'll struggle because
absolutely.
He hasn't faced kind of
windy night and
no, but just the constant games, two days, three days, he'll struggle.
Oscar's interesting though, because Oscar, I was watching him play for Brazil. Oscar in the Premier League looks really light and sort of like he could be knocked over by a gust of wind. For Brazil at Wembley the other week, Oscar had far more bite in his play than any of the other Brazilian players. It was quite an interesting contrast. It's not what you expect from him. But there is a balance to be struck between getting them that stamina, that endurance, that physical ability to cope with England, and not impacting on the way that they play the game, players like that. Because you can take players and make them too muscular, and they don't have that suppleness of touch, that deftness to actually make the difference. And that's something the English game loses out in.
We may have to pick this up, the whole the physical demands of the Premier League, you need muscles and stuff like that. We have to pick that up another time, because I think you guys are both wrong, but we can discuss that. We can discuss that on a different occasion.
I'm shocked. You would disagree?
I want to throw it back and take this opportunity to praise Brendan Rodgers for something that happened. Tony, I want to get you on this, okay? Because, all right, Liverpool went to play in St. Petersburg last week. Those who know the background is there's a group of St. Petersburg.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work.
You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Supporters calling themselves Landskrona, they came out and issued a manifesto saying that they believed that a local identity, and so they only wanted people from, I think it was sort of Russia, like Finland, Eastern Europe, and so on, which I thought was kind of funny given that their manager is Italian and they've got all these Portuguese players. But beyond that, and these guys, and also they also didn't want any homosexuals either, so I guess they only wanted straight people from that part of the world. But and in the past, there have been incidents where they have racially abused opposing players, and there's a whole thing that they've never really had any. How can I say this? Sort of fully black players. They have some mixed race players now, and even that's like seen as like a small victory. But what struck me was the media in the days leading up to this game, they sent their finest men to St. Petersburg, a very snowy St. Petersburg, as I think I saw from one of the photos you tweeted, where the river was frozen and whatnot. Looking for sort of racist hooligans and whatnot. You had Ian Eyre going and writing to the mayor of St. Petersburg, as if what the hell is the mayor of St. Petersburg going to do? And I thought this was a classic ratcheting up of pressure, like we're going to find these racists if they're out there. Well, guess what happened? The game came off without incidents. And I have to give credit to Brendan Rodgers for coming out and pointing that out, that we were also freaked out by it, but on the day they were class. Were you expecting this?
I wasn't expecting any problems, and that was the big issue for me.
Is that because you're kind of a skinhead yourself, at least in appearance?
I mean, skinhead, ugly, pale, I'd fit right in there.
You could play for Zenit, could you?
I could play for Zenit.
Bit of a communist too, as I understand, so perfect.
But you looked at their past, and it was brought up massively before, and that there were going to be problems in this game, and I looked at Zenit's recent past. Their most recent racist incident was 2 years ago, which is clearly too soon for any of us. You know, there's no question about that. It's too recent. But Liverpool themselves have had an incident of racism since then. They've had a supporter who was banned and fined for making racist gestures in the Manchester United game. So would the Russian journalist now be okay to turn up at Anfield in the days leading up to the second leg and turn press conference into questions of racism in Liverpool? Will they then turn the streets around Anfield and find racists, which will exist because they exist in every city in the world? Is that now how it should play out? Should foreign journalists treat English football clubs the same way that we can sometimes treat Eastern European ones? I thought it was a disgrace. I was absolutely uncomfortable in the extreme in the press conferences leading up to the game, because I just thought that the Zenit were unfairly maligned. Yes, they do have a problem. They have a problem with a minority. Their extremist group, I think, numbers 100 members, and they have tens of thousands of supporters. So I just think there was a complete loss of perspective. I think it reflected particularly badly on the English media rather than on Zenit.
I liked the when the Zenit fans unfurled the Crimean War banner, the reports in one or two newspapers suggested that was some sort of grey insult to British history, and that they were sort of taking our Crimean dead in vain. It's amazing what the media will do to drum up.
That really happened.
Yeah, there's a little. Not it wasn't
the kind of papers that I don't read.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of this is the journalism of fear. The initial scare story means that Liverpool have to speak about the problem, because if they don't, it's dereliction of duty and not taking the issue seriously if there is a problem. And then journalists who don't want to write, who didn't write the initial story and wouldn't want to, then have to follow it up because they are scared that if something does happen, they have to take it seriously. And it's just a story that was permeated by fear and by trying to cause fear. And I just think that is the service to readers, and it did do the service to Zenith. And I agree that they do have a problem, but there was no problem on that night, so it shouldn't have been anticipated. Let's see what happens. If it does happen, report it, condemn it, do whatever you like. But beforehand, there's nothing to report except trying to speculate and spread fear.
In our debate this week, we're going to talk managers, because it's kind of interesting. This was the week where Davy Moyes told Everton, like, you know, I'm going to make a decision on my future at the end of the season in terms of his contract talks. And you sort of look at, and I use the definition of big club rather loosely. I hope nobody gets offended, but by big club, for the purposes of this discussion, it's going to be a club with a large support and a lot of money to spend that can legitimately finish top four or expect to finish top four, right? So no disrespect to Leeds today or Newcastle or whatever, but having a look at this, if you look at the number of British managers who've been employed by the bigger clubs over the last few years, you're basically talking Harry Redknapp, you're talking Kenny Dalglish at Liverpool, you're talking, and I guess Kenny was also there back when Newcastle were spending, but that was more than a decade ago. You're talking Mark Hughes, Roy Hodgson at Liverpool, not for long. And then, of course, we've got Brendan Rodgers today. Obviously, the two biggest jobs, Arsenal and United, the same guy's been there the whole time, but that's not a lot of turnover and not a lot of opportunities, Rory. Can you explain it?
Well, I think, first of all, we probably need to say that it's not necessarily a problem with British managers. There are loads of Scottish managers, no shortage of Scottish managers at all.
They still don't seem to get the top job. I mean,
you've got Ferguson at Manchester United. I take your point.
I think Ferguson was appointed before you were born, back in 1986.
That's only just after I was born. I take your point.
I'm talking about now.
That if United came up, then they wouldn't necessarily look at a British manager. The outstanding candidates are not British. Yes, I agree with you.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of managers being produced, the problem is not in Britain. I think the problem is in England, generally. I think that that is a point that needs making. You obviously don't agree, but fine. Why it has become an issue, I think, is partly to do with fashion. I think that there is a sort of almost like an inverse... There's almost an inferiority complex when it comes to managers, that in the same way you get loads of African countries who've got perfectly good managers themselves who insist on getting these random Frenchmen to manage them. In mid-table Premier League clubs, there is a perception that you have to have a foreign manager because they're more sophisticated, they're more tactically sort of astute.
You say that, but how many mid-table English clubs have foreign managers, apart from Swansea?
That's a good question.
Back to me later. Pedro.
I'm really passionate about this because I see the Premier League and I see British football from an outsider's point of view. And I think it goes back to mentality, from the oldest coach to the youngest fan. And the mentality here in Britain, and I'm the first one to say that I love the passion that people have about football here, but it's too much about the running, it's too much about the fighting, it's too much about the working, and not enough about technique. And I think British football is stuck 20 years behind most other prominent countries around the world, where you go to a stadium and if a player tries a flick or a trick and misses, he's going to be jeered for the rest of the game, even by his own fans. And people just need to appreciate that football has moved on. No matter how hard a team or a player is going to work, if they're not as good and not as talented as someone else, they'll lose. And it's not unfair. It's just the way that football is. And you look at the few British players that I consider to be really technically gifted, they're not given a lot of chances. And I look at Adam Johnson, I look at Joe Cole, and these guys were marginalized because they didn't have that workhorse mentality, because they weren't as consistent as everybody else. And I think it goes to the managers as well, because a lot of the international players that are coming into the Premier League more and more every year, they won't adapt to that kind of mentality.
Can I jump in there for one second? Sorry, no. Did you mention Adam Johnson and Joe Cole? I think there's
because let the record reflect, Joe Cole was marginalized by Jose Mourinho at Chelsea, who's not a British manager, and Adam Johnson was marginalized by Roberto Mancini at City, who's not a British manager. There you go. I'm sticking up for British managers.
Sure, but with Adam Johnson, it was the only top club where he played where expectations were high for a player. And I think Samir Nasri has been a lot worse than Adam Johnson ever was. But since he's foreign, then that's fine. Since he's English, it doesn't really go along with the mentality. And Joe Cole still played at Chelsea and played well. He wasn't marginalized. He was just moved to the left wing where perhaps he wasn't as affected.
But I would say, I think Pedro has a that's a really good point, that whether the managers themselves are foreign or not, the culture is of running, of athleticism, of work, first and foremost. The foreign managers who succeed in England tend to be the ones who prioritise that. Look at Mourinho and Mancini. They're not exactly sort of aesthetes, are they? They're managers who want to win first and foremost, and the way to win in England is to run and to fight and to do and to tackle and all that stuff.
Wenger did pretty well, I mean, for a while.
Yeah, but those Arsenal sides were athletic. They had different qualities that worked well in England because they didn't exist anywhere else. But they were also. If you look at those Arsenal sides between 1998 and 2005, they're massive and they were quick. What I would say is that England has an attachment to that footballing culture of running, of work that we've had, that's been in existence for so many years, for decades, and now. It's an inherently reactionary football culture. We don't look forward. We don't try and change. I spoke to someone in Germany the other week who was telling me
Klaus.
That Bastian Schweinsteiger is finished. Bastian Schweinsteiger is 29, and in Germany there is, including Olaf Thon, who's a pundit over there now, there is a feeling that Schweinsteiger is now too old-fashioned for football, because people like Ilkay Gundogan do what Schweinsteiger does much quicker, much more directly, and much more effectively. In England, we still look back to how football used to be, and when we try and change, it is to catch up with foreign nations.
Sorry, Tony, I need to balance out this negativity coming from the studio. Can you give me some hope here, perhaps in the guise of David Moyes, because he seems to be the one guy that we all praise over the years. His achievements at Everton are obvious in difficult circumstances. I made the point that whenever Chelsea changed their manager, they should at least interview. You know, they should have a Rooney Rule for David Moyes and at least interview him, see what he has to say, rather than hiring the next old Benitez that comes along. But hey, that's just me. But How do you see Moyes? Is there almost an ingrained bias against British managers? Given that, I said, you can count them on one hand, the ones who got legit jobs where they could actually do something.
No, I don't see that. I just think there's a combination of factors which mean that British managers don't get a chance when these jobs come up. If you use Moyes as an example, the next time the Chelsea job comes up, which will probably be very soon, I would be surprised if they consider Moyes because he has no Champions League experience. If you're a club that wants to win the Champions League, do you give a manager who's a novice at that level a job? I just don't.
Mourinho had no Champions League experience when he won the Champions League. I mean,
that's true, but that is the way it works in Portugal. It doesn't work like that at all. I agree with you that is a different thing, but I do think it would be easier for that to happen in Portugal than it would do here. I think Chelsea see themselves as a club who should be challenging for the Champions League, not one where it'd be a bonus if you do well in it, which is what it was for Portugal that year, the same way it was for Liverpool the year after. It was an absolute bonus and it was unexpected. People didn't think they would win it, whereas Chelsea, Roman Abramovich expects them to win. He expects them to compete, be top four, playing the best football. Now if you're looking to do that, it's very, very difficult to pick David Moyes, and that for me will be the thing that I think could end up squeezing a manager of David Moyes' quality out of English football. I think he will look at Everton and think he can't do it there, and I think the clubs where he could do it won't give him a chance, and that is the problem. He will be looking at the German league, which he is a big fan of, and he's always said he would like to work there, and he may get a chance in Germany that he maybe wouldn't get in England. So I agree that does sum up the problem, but I don't know how you get around it, because if you're Chelsea, you want to prove a manager, and David Moyes at European level, he's had a couple of cracks at the Europa League. He hasn't proven himself. He's struggled at that level.
Lansley's not here, so I'll throw the question to you, Tony. Is this something that St. George's Park can fix with its great resources and everything?
No, not for me. And for me, it all comes down to English coaching. Rory will remember this. We were with the current England manager when he was at Liverpool, and we asked him about his managerial influences. Yeah. And considering this is someone who'd spent much of his career abroad, who'd been involved in football, as he always reminds everyone, for 37, 38 years, and who I hasten to add, I think he's doing a decent job at England, despite the fact I'm not a particular fan. He told us that his managerial greatest influence in coaching were Charles Hughes, Don Howe, people of that ilk. Yeah, and that was the moment where I was scared, to be honest with you. I sat there and thought, there is nothing progressive about coaching if this is the manager who was the man to take Liverpool forward and is the man to take England forward. Then that is worrying. I spoke to young coaches at Liverpool's academy who, when the Spanish coaches arrived to take over youth development there, they were worried. They were worried about the change, what it would bring. And to a man, they all told me that the standard of coaching rose inexorably after they arrived, because the Spanish coaches were far superior. And I just think in England, you will get the level of managers you deserve because of the standard of coaching that is prevalent in this country. I think it's very difficult to separate the two.
All right, time now for some quick hits. Chelsea make hard work of it, but eventually get rid of Brentford. Rory, John Terry denies reports of a bust-up with Rafa, even as Manuel Pellegrini's agent links him to Stamford Bridge. Does Manny fit the profile?
Plays nice football, nice fella, good record, proven winner, I think it's probably fair to say, isn't he? He's had enough success to be considered a winner, be quite dignified when he was inevitably sacked. Yeah, I think he'd be perfect. What I don't understand, though, is what the criteria for the Chelsea manager are if Pellegrini is a contender. Chelsea have jumped the shark as a football club, is basically what I'm going to say.
Pellegrini is kind of like a Chilean Ancelotti with less success, fewer Champions Leagues, but much, much better dressed than Ancelotti. Tony, you love talking about Everton, so talk to me about the 2-2 draw with Oldham, and in particular, that insane late goal by Matt Smith. We all love underdog stories, but Dean Bouzanis and that other guy just basically barreling into Tim Howard. Did the referee lose his whistle?
I thought Phil Dahl, the referee, got caught up in the game throughout. I think he refereed it as an English cup tie, and that did mean that there were certain very, very blatant fouls, and that didn't go punished, didn't get booked. And if that happened at the end, it was only in keeping what happened in the rest of the game. But Oldham deserved the draw, but however the game came about, they deserved the draw, which again, David Moyes admitted.
Wigan cruised through the quarterfinal with a 4-1 win at Huddersfield. Pedro, I know you'd love to talk in detail about that game, but instead, I'm just going to ask you whether this is a distraction in Wigan's battle to avoid the drop. And if they do go down, will it mean Roberto Martinez won't get the top job he supposedly deserves?
I think winning is contagious. So when you win, I don't think that's ever bad for your team. So I don't think it could be a distraction. They'll see it for what it is. They'll go as far as they can. They'll still invest most energy in staying up in the Premier League. Roberto Martinez should get a crack at a team with more talent and more resources. I think if they go down, that'll happen.
In fact, Davy Moyes gets some of the... I wonder if Roberto could be going the way of Davy Moyes, the way he's going. Millwall bring non-league Luton's run to an end, and we have to call him non-league Luton, of course. The whole city apparently goes on lockdown as police fear the return of the bad old days of hooliganism. Right, it's 2013, not 1985. Was all this really necessary with hindsight? Is it a case of better safe than sorry? And are some clubs still stuck in the 1970s, or at least their supporters?
I think elements probably of every club's supporters are stuck in the 1970s. Millwall have had a bad press recently, but there's no club in Britain that does more work to try and counteract its negative image than Millwall, and they deserve,
as they keep telling us,
they deserve immense credit for that, and they do tell people often enough to make sure we all know. I suppose it's the same with the previews about the sort of the night of shame, the night that changed English football, to the stuff that preceded the Liverpool Zenit game. It's, yeah, there isn't. It is journalism of fear to an extent to say that it, you know, this is what happened, and that when these two last met in the cup, what if it happened again? I don't think there was ever a possibility it would happen again on that scale, or indeed at all. It passed off relatively peacefully, I think, the game. But that said, it was an important historical... It's a quirk of history. They got each other again, and it was an important night in English football's history, that March 13th, 1985. No question about it.
Probably a good thing that it passed off without incident. Manchester City pummeled Leeds 4-0. Tony, it's your call. Would you rather talk about City's chances of now going on a run and closing the gap at the top, the way we seem to do every week until they lose? Or do you want to talk about Warnock blaming that insane mess with the takeover for his team's poor performance because it's always somebody else's fault?
Exactly. Neil Warnock blaming someone else. Sheffield United's relegation was blamed on absolutely everyone. Carlos Tevez, Rafa Benitez, anyone he possibly could.
Kia Jurabson.
He'll do the same thing at Leeds. He will pass the buck. But, I mean, for me, I'm not a Warnock fan. I think he's one of those managers who's symbolised by a player who's tended to follow him down, particularly, and that player is Michael Brown. He enjoys anti-footballers and therefore his teams play anti-football. So I've got no problem that Leeds dispense with his services. I think Leeds United deserve much better.
And who knows, maybe with this whole GFH insanity, they may yet get it. Former Leeds player and U.S. international Robbie Rogers has come out as gay shortly after announcing his retirement at age 25. Pedro, he wrote poignantly about how he now felt free to be himself. I'm just wondering, should we somehow be celebrating this? Obviously, we want the guy to be happy and everybody should be happy, but should we also be seeing this as maybe a failure of football, that this guy who presumably loves the game felt the need to quit football before he could come out?
I think we should do both. We should celebrate the fact that he had the courage to do it, and we should be lamenting the fact that he feels he can't be accepted. It is crazy how macho and misogynistic football still is, and hopefully it'll change in the future, but he visibly thinks that he wants to dedicate his energy and time to something else, and perhaps one of those things could be leading campaigns to open the minds of a lot of people who are making decisions within the football world. So down the line, it won't really matter what sexual orientation the player has.
Just reading his blog, it was fantastic. I sort of saw how normal the guy is. He's all excited that, you know what he did? He got an internship at Men's Health magazine, which I thought, and he's into clothes and fashion, and I thought, you know, good for him. There is life after football.
Gab, one for you. Not much of a title race in the Premier League, La Liga, or the Bundesliga this year, with teams all having massive gaps at the top. What's it like in Italy?
It's close, yes. There's a 4-point gap between Juventus and Napoli, but the real problem is that Napoli are one of those teams that always bottle it when they get a chance to close the gap. Juventus lost on Saturday night to Roma, very emotional night for Roma. Totti scored goal number 224 of his career, now just one goal away from second on the all-time Serie A scoring chart. So you figure Napoli, hey, they're at home against a Sampdoria side that's so-so, we'll get the 3 points, close the gap. But no, they were terrible. Some of their best players were very, very poor. Goalkeeper, I think I've ever seen him play this bad, and it was a 0-0 draw. So the lead is still 4 points. And to add insult to injury, Marek Hamsik held up at gunpoint in his car on his way home from the ground, and they stole his very expensive watch. That's all we've got time for this week. It's been fun and it's been real. Thanks to my guests, Pedro Pinto from CNN World Sport, Rory K. Smith, and of course, from the place they call Merseyside, it's Tony Barrett. You can come find us on Twitter. We're all on there. We'd all love to hear from you, especially Pedro. You can also email us, as so many of you do every week, at gamepodcast@thetimes.co.uk. Remember, you can go to thetimes.co.uk. You'll find your news, your views, web chats, blogs, analysis. You get to enjoy my blog on Tuesday and my web chat as well. Also, let's plug Pedro's show on CNN, CNN FC. It's a football show, and Michael Owen has already been on this season, so presumably you won't see him again for a while. Till next time, take care.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.